we're back. Welcome once again to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar, and it's finally here. It's been digested. You have the why would they have a background of like monks chanting when the movie's called The Nun?
She does have a deep, low voice. I don't think that's a spoiler.
I guess. All right. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, but that isn't a monk chant. But all right. Yeah, we're doing The Nun. It's finally here, our review and our movie event pod about The Nun, the Corinne Hardy latest, the latest entry into the Conjuring or slash Warren cinematic universe. We spent our couple episodes reviewing the Conjuring movies, the Annabelle movies, everything that James Wan has done to turn basically water into millions of dollars.
Yes, we've had fun with this franchise as fans and certainly
absolutely
as movie critics here, just kind of taking a little skip and a jaunt away from the Oscar sprint profiles and all the breaking news we've been doing with the best popular film. We've had fun with this. Even the bad movies in this franchise have been fun to watch and fun to make
I'll have you apologize. There's no bad movies in this franchise, but
it's been, there's some.
It's been a deliberate choice. September and October, we kind of made the conscious decision we wanted to do more horror, more scary stuff, and if we could tie it into Oscar stuff, which we will down the line as well, we're going to do that. But this one, probably not an Oscar movie, if I'm speaking conservatively, but we're going to review The Nun. We're going to approach it like an OSP, an Oscar sprint profile. We'll give you a non-spoiler and a spoiler section.
More of a movie event.
Yeah, but it is a movie event pod for us. I am your co-host, Mike One. This is also Mike.
Also Mike, and I did prepare a 6 degrees of MMO. I know you said before the episode today, no, you're not supposed to do it yet. We'll give people more time. I know we're getting responses already.
Yes, we have a couple. I'm actually happy about that. People have actually listened and thrown stuff our way, so that's nice. So, yeah, we do. If you want to go back, listen to our last episode number 19, we introduced 6 degrees of MMO. It's a new game we want to kind of play. It's just a silly little thing. We want you guys to kind of be creative, give us your thoughts and how you can connect. Again, your challenge was connecting Deborah Messing through a series of films, video games, music videos, however creative you want to get about it, to Sir Anthony Hopkins. The most creative ones we're going to give a shout out to and read live on air. We'll give a shout out to your social media, all that kind of fun stuff.
It's clicking around on IMDb, having fun. You know, use 6 degrees, use 30 degrees.
Sure.
Or just give us like what you think is an impossible pairing, and either Mike and I will kind of prepare it on our own if we think it's funny to watch ourselves squirm and for you to listen to us squirm while we try to do it off the cuff.
Absolutely.
Or we can take it open book test style on air as well. So there's a couple different ways we can approach it. But
and
yeah,
don't underestimate our appreciation for the absurd. Don't just think if you do a 30 degrees one, we'll just cast it aside and not read it, because I am a psychotic human being.
If they listened to the last few episodes, Mike, just our eclectic taste the last week, we did Searching, which is like a fringe Oscar movie.
Yes.
We did Breaking Oscar News on the Best Popular Film, where we touted ourselves and our fix above that of the Academy. And then we also did The Conjuring 2. And we did
Annabelle
Creation.
What was that? The movie there?
The Conjuring 2. All
right, thank you. Wax in my ears.
And what was the other thing? Oh, Halloween and Captain Marvel. So we had
a little mishmash. Yeah, we're covering everything pop culture.
Here's the thing. Christopher Tapley just tweeted out before we started recording today that being a film critic or this job, he's like, this job is also about what you don't review. And I wonder if that was...
Oh, how dare you, sir!
I like Christopher Tapley.
Yeah, he's really good.
He's the Variety guy and Oscar critic.
Variety probably can't take their time.
He's probably giving us good advice, Mike. You know, it's like the space between the notes, you know, the Sonic Highways, Dave Grohl thing there.
Look, again, Variety probably has a lot on their plate. They actually got to interview these people. They got to get to all the shaping the Oscar thing.
Tapley can focus.
Right. We have an eclectic taste, like you said. So that's why we're doing The Nun. We had the lead up to The Nun, and it's finally here. The payoff is going to be worth the hype. Oh, boy, do we have some things to say about it. But also, Mike is going to get us started. Cast and crew is where we're going first.
The Nun is directed by Corinne Hardy from 2015's The Hollow, which got solid reviews. The trailer looks pretty strong for it, Mike. It's on VOD right now. I have it queued up to watch it. I've never seen it. There are a bunch of Game of Thrones actors in it, so I'm kind of intrigued by that. Yeah. It is my world!
Yours and everybody else's except mine, I think.
The reviews on this trailer tout it as one of the best creature features in a while, and I love that genre.
Cool.
Give me a good creature feature. I'm in. So The Nun is written by Gary Dauberman from It and Annabelle movies. We've been talking about him a bunch.
He's like the go-to screenwriter for all these horror movies.
Yes. A story credit goes to some dude named James Wan.
Never heard of him.
James Wan. He's the Conjuring Universe steward, of course. Saw director there.
Do you think he just rides around in a car made of money? Like, he's just got to be paid. He's turned such a great job with every horror franchise. He's just got to be just rolling in it.
Do you think he, like, for sport, just, like, walks up behind people and scares them all the time? You think that's how he's developed his talent?
His next underground guerrilla horror movie, yeah.
Do you think he's like Ashton Kutcher of punked fame, but you've been in wand. Real life? just that's what he's done his whole life?
Yeah, sure.
Like having him as a college roommate, just think about that.
Oh, yeah, it must have been terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. Wake up and he's just watching you taking notes.
You're the top bunk and every morning you wake up to his face next to yours as he stands over the corner
like
of the
bed. I like
to think,
too, in this joking, we're like giving him actual solid ideas for his next multi-jillion dollar horror franchise that he's going to turn into gold.
If he hires us as, you know, his receptionists, he wouldn't have a problem. You've
really
he
been
could
pitching
just,
that.
You could own all these ideas.
Really been pitching that for a while. I appreciate the ethics there.
The Nun stars Thaisa Farmiga. She is the younger sister of Vera, who plays Lorraine Warren in the Conjuring films. Thaisa plays Sister Irene here. Dude, she looks so much like older sis.
It's uncanny. It's really uncanny.
Every time she like squints or kind of recoils.
I actually thought this was going to be her playing the younger version of Vera's character, but no.
Yeah, I was waiting for a tie-in. I think just the, well, I guess that's a little bit of a spoiler,
yeah.
But we'll I guess it's a non-spoiler. Anyway,
sure.
Thaisa Farmiga has been in 28 episodes of American Horror Story, The Bling Ring, Anna, The Final Girls. She will be coming out in 2018 with We Have Always Lived in a Castle and Clint Eastwood's next film, The Mule. So look out for Thaisa Farmiga. I thought she does a nice job in this. We'll talk about it in performances.
Yeah.
Oscar nominee for Best Lead Actor in A Better Life, Demian Bashir plays Father Burke. He played Fidel Castro and Steven Soderbergh's Che. Then he was the unlikeliest boyfriend ever in Weeds. Like the, I think he was the mayor of Mexico City, right? Something like that.
Oh, was he? I
loved Weeds.
Only seen a couple episodes of it.
And after his Oscar nomination in 2011, Bashir has starred in Savages, The Heat, FX's The Bridge, The Hateful Eight, and Alien Covenant. Bashir,
he's another eclectic guy. He's getting all over all different sorts of genres and mediums. Good for him.
Bouncing around for sure. Bashir will be starring in the Doug Liman, Charlie Kaufman project, Chaos Walking. I know that's a big book that I've had on my Audible for a while. I don't know what it's about, though, but everybody recommends it. But that's a weird duo. Doug Liman from the first Bourne movie and Go and all those, you know, like almost pre-Snatch and Lockstock movies, and Charlie Kaufman from Adaptation of Being John Malkovich.
You got to think it's going to have some kind of, it's probably like a comedy drama? A dramedy, if you will?
A comedy heist?
Yeah,
dramedy?
Like a character
a dramedy
profile.
Heist.
A character profile, too, yeah.
A dramedy heist movie, yes. Right. That's what I've...
I need to rob this bank, but I fell in love with the teller.
But I have an existential funk that's just dragging me down.
Also, I'm a secret agent.
Chaos Walking. I'm interested. Anyway, back to Demian Bashir. He will be acting alongside John Cho in the upcoming reboot of The Grudge called Grudge. He also has... Yeah.
A lot of people I like are attached to that.
Yeah.
And I was not a fan of the first Grudge series.
Me neither.
But not I never saw the Japanese, the original Grudge. The Sarah Michelle Gellar series I was never really crazy about, but we'll see. Maybe
I think I saw both. I never liked them. I remember the Ring. That was a big craze. Like, they were making Ringu into The Ring.
Yes.
They're making the Japanese Grudge into, Audition never got adapted. But
thank God, because that Audition movie is perfect for a horror movie. It is
insane.
Gross.
It's gross. That needle. Oh, my God. Oh, anyway. Man. Bashir, we go on enough tangents for you folks here. Bashir
Can
will
I
be
you in a bowl of vomit.
What?
Audition? Bowl of vomit?
All right.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
No. Why did you remind me of that?
Because that's like the lasting scene from that movie. Yeah.
No, Mike. No. Your references have finally gone too far. Oh, God. All right, let's move on. 2019's TV movie, Grand Hotel, will also star Bashir to finally finish with his goddamn profile here. I like the man, but that was ridiculous. Ellie's and Valerian and blah, blah, blah. Jonas Bloquet plays Frenchie in this movie.
I liked him, too.
I have mixed feelings about
him. Yeah, he was like the forced comedic relief.
Yeah. I call him some names later. Mulholland Drive and The Princess Diaries, Bonnie Ahrens plays the nun. Those are three films rarely mentioned in the same sentence.
Yeah, those are like different sides of the spectrum, I think.
Tony Erdman's Ingrid Bisou is Sister Oana.
She was perfectly casted.
Ramsay Bolton's evil girlfriend Miranda from Game of Thrones, Charlotte Hope, is Sister Victoria at the beginning of the movie.
Yep.
From Deep State and Doctor Who, Sandra Teles is Sister Ruth. And from Luther, Free Fire, the Lobster, Michael Smiley is Bishop Pasquale at the beginning of the movie. The Nun also stars Lynette Gaza, Jack Falk, August Maturo, Annie Sava, Gabrielle Downey, David Horowitz, and Tudor Monteneau.
That's a great name.
Oh, that was a long cast and crew. We are lunatics. Okay, yeah. Story inception and production notes here, folks. Just a little bit on this. Shortly after the release of The Conjuring 2 in 2016, Warner Brothers announced The Nun would go into development.
So why wouldn't it? I mean, you introduced basically two new spin-off characters in that second Conjuring movie that you think were specifically made for spin-off movies. So it makes sense.
Right, which one was going to be more popular?
Right.
It was announced that this film would come first chronologically in the Conjuring universe. They had one movie set in the 60s, right? That was Annabelle. And
yeah.
Anyway, there's like a 60s and 80s. There's a couple, a 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And this film is 50s. This is also...
They're doing exactly what the MCU is doing. They're bouncing around deck. It's, you know,
cool.
Obviously there's differences, but it's nuts.
It is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, set in 1952, the film was shot entirely in Romania.
That explains the architecture.
Right. In August, YouTube had to remove an advertisement that was too scary.
It was. It was terrifying.
Basically, one of the biggest jump scares of the film shown in a short YouTube.
Yeah. We'll get into the marketing of this, too. It's stuff I want to touch on.
I think Facebook did something similar, but you'll have it. Yeah. Box Office Mojo had estimated $32 to $37 million. That bumped up to $36 to $45 million. Now I'm seeing even higher estimates in terms of box office.
$36 to $45, I think, was Variety's numbers, so that's kind of what you would think they're going to end up in. Variety's usually pretty good with their predictions.
So we're getting busy this weekend with work and stuff, not with each other.
And sexually, yes.
But so we're recording this Friday after a Thursday night screening, and we won't know the box office for you on Monday, so I'll have to follow up on that. That is my production notes, Mike.
Yeah, let's do some specs here for the Nun, or as I can call it, like Conjuring 2.5, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Written and directed by Gary Dobman, also Mike Told You, with James Wan being the only other name with a story by credit. I'm surprised he didn't get a character credit or characters by credit, because he's the one that kind of introduced them in his film, but maybe Dobman came up with them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Debuted a couple days ago, September 4th, 2018, at the TCL Chinese Theater in Hollywood, and went wide technically today when we're recording this on September 7th, which is the Friday, as also Mike just told you. You probably won't be hearing this until Monday, but this is the live date of the wide premiere. 96-minute runtime on an R rating produced by New Line, Atomic Monster, and The Safran Company, who have been the three production companies that have made everything except Conjuring 1, which was kind of the kickoff to this. After Conjuring 1, which was a Wan product, he got production rights as well, and his Atomic Monster Company's name attached to every Conjuring film there too. Reported budget from Box Office Mojo of $22 million distributed by Warner Brothers, as every Conjuring movie also has been. The $22 million, interestingly, is almost the total amount that the two prior Annabelle films were made for combined. So they kind of, this is the first offshoot solo property for the Conjuring universe that has a pretty substantial budget. $20 million is still not huge, $22 million, but...
Well, it's equal to the Conjuring 1's budget, yeah.
So they're putting a little more faith into all these spin-offs and...
It'll be in the black by the end of the weekend.
All those movies are.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about some ratings and how this was received. IMDb, not bad, especially for a horror movie. 6.3 on 4,500-plus reviews. That's good! Rotten Tomato, 30%. Critic scores on 71 reviews, 50 of them negative.
It was hanging around 50 when we recorded our last episode.
Plummeted a little bit.
Yeah.
Average of 4.7 out of 10. That's bad. Audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, 53% on 1,500 reviews. Okay. Average of 3.2 out of 5. That's in the middle. So we're all over the spectrum here. 46 Metascore from Metacritic based on 30 reviews. Three critics give it a high of a 75. Four critics gave it a low of a 25. How do you give a movie? I don't understand. If you are a lover of movies, that so much so that you've made it your life to be a critic, what, if you have that much of an appreciation for film, how can you give any movie that actually took effort and time and a budget, it's 25.
I think some critics out there, I won't name them, but some that we've argued with in general, if they find like something that's illogical in the setup or the premise, just, and this movie has that, it ruins like the rest of the movie, and they're just like, they just quibble with it for the rest of the way. I also think this movie plays on your fears a little bit. She is a terrifying looking character. Yeah.
Great and, horror movie character.
And I think that if you're a little on edge and stressed out going in, you know, if you don't love horror movies and then this movie does some dumb shit, then you're just like, all right, forget this. It's scaring me. It's making me uncomfortable. And like,
the protagonist is doing something dumb. Right,
you
now,
and I are in the movies laughing at its flaws, whereas these people are just gritting their teeth and just angry at them.
Well, lighten up! like Annabelle, WB probably won't care all that much about the critical derision so long as the financials stay on track for what projections are. Also, Mike just told you that Variety reported...
Also, Mike just told you what your problem is, like a pompous dirtbag.
Variety reported that the movie made $5.4 million during Thursday for its preview showings and has been tracking to perform between $36 and $45 million for the opening weekend domestic gross, which again would put it on track to likely break the $100 million domestic box office mark. Just for means of comparison with the Warren Cinematic Universe, the openings have ranged from the low of Annabelle Creation's $35 million for its opening weekend to a high of the original Conjuring's $41 million. So anything above $41 million would make it the most successful opening weekend for a Conjuring or a Warren Cinematic Universe movie.
I think we're gonna get either a Nun 2 or I think we're gonna follow, you know, some characters in this one.
The Nun 2.
The ones who survive. We won't
this
tell you.
This time it's sacrilege.
I'm in! That's great. That's awesomely bad. So, Mike, the plot premise reads, a priest with a haunted past and a novice on the threshold of her final vows are sent by the Vatican to investigate the death of a young nun in Romania and confront a malevolent force in the form of a demonic nun.
Oh, those vows.
I'm surprised they didn't say old school paranormal investigators at the top here, because that's what it was, and that's kind of a cool premise. Like, this is the Vatican's 1950 version of 1970s Warrens.
Yeah.
These are the Catholic paranormal investigators, which is very cool.
Where the profession all started from. Yeah, you're probably right.
So in terms of expectations, and kind of tease our review a little bit, I was expecting something super duper scary here. What about you? Were you kind of laid back? You didn't think?
Well, the not having any reviews come out,
I was worried.
Yeah, we talked about how we were kind of worried about that, because usually when you hold back reviews,
the quote from Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle kept coming into my head, like when they're down the hall from their I forgot my keys. We've gone too far. I forget what he forgets.
Yeah.
So we're at episode 2 of the 4 movie rewatch.
Well, I don't think it was a bad movie per se. I mean, there's certainly, you get some scares in it. And I've seen some reviews say that it lacks any scares. I think that's ridiculous, because there are some vehemently scary parts in this.
Yeah, I was expecting more of an It style movie in terms of a scare fest, a haunted house ride, kind of a carnival thing going on. I think they kind of focused in on the formula with these last few movies, Annabelle Creation and Conjuring 2, that James Wan has kind of set for the franchise. I just wonder if too much of a quote-unquote good thing or a scary thing. I mean, I heard a lot of reviewers on YouTube say this morning. They seem to say that it was too saturated, and I wanted to examine that with you today. But I'd have appreciated some reviews leading up to it, but bottom line is, when you have a 30 to 60%er, everybody's mixed.
Yeah.
So you kind of...
I mean, there's also people that jump on the bandwagon, too. You know, they see a 30 or 40%. Oh, I thought it was bad, too. You know, it's like, it was what it was. I thought it was... as a horror movie, I think the 6.3 from IMDb is probably the most indicative for me. Yeah. It's like, it's an okay horror movie.
If you forgive this film, its sins,
yeah,
then you can enjoy
which
this.
Plays like, a couple ways, which is nice because it's a religious movie.
Again, we laughed at those yeah. sins, and there I are
some.
Really
I
often.
Mean, there's some egregiously, like, reprehensible decisions made by the characters at certain points, but that is also come to be expected in horror movies sometimes.
I have a re-rank of dumb characters for the whole series later on for you here. All right, so I guess we'll move into production values, Mike. I thought the cinematography, the production design, those were the highlights of the film for me. This was a feast for the eyes.
Yeah, you could tell they were in Romania. Like I said, the architecture was beautiful. They spent a lot of their time in what this building they call the Abbey, which is just this gigantic, like, mega church type thing, but built in, like, the 1800s.
Right.
Absolutely gorgeous, made out of stone.
If you like dance like the kids in South Park around Hot Topic, you know, just and if you read Edgar Allan Poe, if you want a sumptuous gothic delight, as somebody put it on YouTube this morning, then this is Gracer's reviews to be on the trailer there. If you
probably
like that
accurate,
sort of thing,
yeah.
If then you this is the bizarro camera angle, super effective in terms of ambiance kind of movie for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I also mentioned to you before recording how Corinne Hardy went to the James Wan School of Filmmaking because a lot of those close-up shots of a character's face with the action happening in the background with their back turned to it, they can't see what's going on, but we can as the audience.
Yeah,
James
it's like
Wan
the best.
That, yeah.
Game of peekaboo ever played on anybody, babies or adults.
Yeah, so the cinematography is up there. It's really professionally done. It's great.
Gonzo camera angles, like
yes.
Terry Gilliam kind of camera angles. You're really just like on acid camera angles.
Yeah, totally.
When they want to do that, and of course, I love the setting in terms of all the obstacles that it puts in. You know, the hallways and the...
Can you imagine being an intern on that set and just, like, how much time did you think you spent making crosses?
Making crosses with the hanging cloths?
Yeah.
I mean, the bedsheet motif. It might have been a bit overdone here. We've been talking about how the
they
whole series...
They have it in every movie, though. Yeah,
it's
pretty
so
much every
good
movie.
In every movie. Yeah. But again, the sheets hanging was one of my favorite scenes of the thing, and we're going to talk about it. But production design is phenomenal.
Yes. A lot of effort went into
Such
it. A lot of
a
care
unique,
went into it.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean when I say, I mean, you just give out a 25? Come on. Look at the work that went into just setting up these shots.
Reminded me of, you know, Shadow of the Vampire, the Willem Dafoe movie, you know, in Transylvania there. It, in terms of gothic imagery, this was awesome.
Sound, I don't really have much. The score was effective as it needs to be for a horror movie, but I don't really have...
I thought it was fairly strong. I don't think it's necessarily on the level of the other Conjuring films. It's almost too loud and too... often
you thought
in
so
this? Like they didn't play the silence enough
you're right, like, especially on the heels of Conjuring 2
they were
where
a little,
was such a big part.
Yeah, if they were more patient, Mike, I wonder if this movie could have been scarier. I wonder if they were worried about making it too scary because the nun is...
I think without a question that's actually true, because the pacing of this, there was no downtime really. It's like one set scare after another set scare after another set scare, and they only had one gratuitous scene or one scene where everyone came together and just talked out their feelings. And
now, the score was pretty ominous, and there are some scenes where it really works well. I think the dread kind of grips you in a couple. I'll talk about the visual effects in a minute, but there's a couple sequences where, you know, you're hearing the combination of the music. I forget I'm watching an awesomely bad movie, because this movie really sweeps me into the horror sequences, and there's some excellent set pieces that really kind of get my goat. And scare the crap out of me.
In combination with the camera angles. I think
we're like laughing and goofing around. And we're doing that as a defense mechanism at points.
Yeah.
But we're also...
We're tough. We can't be scared by a movie.
We're also quiet.
Oh, yeah.
Just like...
There are some genuinely terrifying parts in this, without question. They did hit the mark.
This movie is effective. Now, there's a nun theme song going on. I can't like put it in my head again that that's that demon choir. There's quite the payoff for her, like, kind of introduction into the movie. Obviously, she's in the whole movie.
I'm happy about this. I'm usually the one that pays more attention to score, but you're going deep on it.
No, it did. It hit me. I noticed it, and I don't usually do. So, again, these production values are strong. I did want to say something about the visual effects, Mike. I think that in terms of, like, the waking nightmare factor. Like, this movie feels like a bad dream where you can't, like, you're running in place, or like where you're obviously the hallway spinning. There's a sequence with that.
Oh, that was
so good.
Yeah. No, that's actually a really good analogy. I totally agree with it. There is, they kind of made it your biggest fear come to life on the screen, but it's as if it's happening in real time. So,
however, there's also another dream sequence that just made me laugh out loud at the beginning of the movie, and you called me a dirty word after I did so.
I forget what that scene was, though.
It was Frenchie having a quick dream, and it was like the Shining dream, and it's not really, it's a flash, but he has like the Shining dream, and then
he wakes up and he's like
suck like blue,
yeah.
And I don't know what he's doing in this movie, so yeah, it's kind of silly. I guess we can get into performances.
Okay.
I think we have things to say.
Yeah, all right. Listen, we talk about capable antagonists, capable protagonists. There are decisions made by both sides in this movie that are just illogical. I called them reprehensible at the time. That you just can't make these decisions. Nobody
wait
would.
Until spoilers?
Nobody would make these decisions.
I can't wait.
Some of these decisions we'll get to in spoilers, and they are legendary.
This reminds me of like watching a MTV reality show. I mean, these beautiful idiots, though, are addictive to watch, but they're such a bunch of bimbos. They're so stupid.
Yeah.
This whole series has stupid bimbo factor that's enjoyable.
The ancillary movies are kind of reliant on pretty bad protagonists. Like, the Warrens, the Vera Farmiga, Patrick Wilson characters, they're established, they have depth to them. They end up in some kooky situations sometimes, especially in Conjuring 2, but they, for what it's worth, are capable protagonists, whereas the two Annabelle movies, and now this Nun movie, there's some protagonists that make some pretty unforgivable decisions.
Right, and they all have their moments in that regard. Right. I didn't buy the Pepe Le Pew Frenchy stuff as
yeah, you
as
said you weren't a fan. I kind of liked him.
He's like got the Han Solo comic relief thing going. Like, it's kind of funny. Like, I chuckled.
The comic relief stuff was forced. That's why I said it at the top. It's like forced comedic relief. It kind of felt like they just did it in the script because they felt they needed a one-off or one-liner at that point.
He's fairly capable as a helper.
He certainly makes the fewest unforgivable decisions as a
character.
I think
if the other two idiots listened to him a little more.
Although there is a part where he has the only light, the only torch, and he just separates himself from the other two, leaving them completely in the dark.
It's like Ace Ventura 2, where he goes into the bat cave with the torch. He's like, he throws it away immediately.
Yeah. Yes.
And he's running around. Oh, that's funny. Oh, my God. All right, so let's rank the dumb characters in this Conjuring series, Mike. I think that's a non-spoiler thing we should do.
Okay.
All right, we have Father Demian Bashir, Father Burke, and the Nun. We have Annabelle Wallace in Annabelle 1, Haunted Little Girl in Annabelle Creation, the one with polio there. We have the Nun, which I think is a dumb villain.
She made some mistakes in either movie. She made some mistakes in this
and
one.
And, of course, we have Ron Livingston in The Conjuring 1. Mike, you can pick one. You can rank them. It's up to you.
I think Annabelle Wallace from Annabelle 1 is my leader in the clubhouse for poorest decision-making amongst the protagonists.
She can't work an elevator. And nobody multitasks while using a sewing machine. But her.
As we can say from experience, of course. The little girl from Annabelle Creation, I aspire to be like her, because if she can see something so horrifying and then just go back to sleep.
She might not be dumb. She just might be like the greatest hero.
Exactly.
Alive.
Yeah. She's like, this is nothing.
Like her and
Kayla I'll deal
Day,
with this in the morning.
Yeah. Elsie Fisher from 8th grade. And
right.
And that girl, I should have wrote down her character's name, but yeah.
Janice. The girl with polio was Janice. Yeah. In that
sure.
Movie.
Janice.
Ron Livingston also was a pretty poor performance.
It was a bad performance, but he's also dumb because he like doesn't figure that shit out much earlier.
No, you say Annabelle Wallace for your number one as well. So all right, there you go. I didn't see that.
Okay, so Just My Opinion Reviews wonders why the Vatican had to investigate these demons at all in the first place. Wasn't the evil just like contained with the crosses and the?
Obviously not. What are you talking about?
By investigating, aren't they playing directly into the Nun's hands?
No.
Script possibility? Okay, so you're against this. My opinion reviews.
The Nun was clearly coming out of her containment.
And we'll get into it in spoilers. We'll tell you why. Okay, so In terms of the script, Mike, we have dumb characters, which is a bit unforgivable, but it is fun, and we kind of enjoy heckling
them. Yeah, I don't think the characters are just like unforgivable. I think they just make some bad decisions at times. Taissa Farmiga it's a good performance, and I think Damien Bashir is a decent performance. The nun is a good performance.
Again, there's something so scary or so world shattering that happens early in this film, like it did in Annabelle Creation, like it did in The Conjuring, that if you saw that, yeah, you would leave. You would get the hell out like Daniel Kaluuya. Yeah. You'd not stick around and deal with this stuff. Or you would just guard yourself with anything you could possibly do.
Frenchie does. He grabs a crucifix and just holds
Frenchie
it to him.
Frenchie does one thing.
He's a guy. You know, he's not supposed to be investigating the occult.
But the other ones, you know, the Father Bashir is just like, oh yeah, let me study these devil books in the middle of the devil sanctuary where I'm talking to the devil woman. What the fuck is wrong with him? I got more to say on him. He is a moron. And I just can't get over how dumb some of these characters are. But I don't know. In terms of to close this thing out, Mike, we have an Oscar lens that isn't there.
Yeah, we always like to attach the Oscar lens. Obviously, this one's not going to be nominated for anything. We just like to, you know, in a world where this was an Oscars movie, the cinematography is pretty impressive.
Production design
is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think a lot of critics think it's just bona fide terrific. You know, it's very good, but even as good as it is, it's not Oscar level.
It's not going to overcome its reception, its critical reception for the movie.
Favorite is going to look better than this movie at the end of the day. And there's just too many great movies coming out where these very good production values won't necessarily stack up. Bottom line, though, we enjoyed this movie-going experience next to each other.
If you need a horror movie, if you're in the mood, it more than satiates your craving for weirdness and dark stuff.
If you're a fan of this series, there's a lot of connections.
If you're a fan of the series, you have to see this. Yeah, absolutely. Right. If you like the Conjuring movies, then there's a big thing, you know, that at some point in this movie comes out that really plays in well.
And if you're a horror movie fan, if you like that sort of thing, this is an enjoyable in the theaters experience. We went to your Podunk Theater. Now
I will take your apology.
And I'm sorry, because they actually have a few theaters in there that are big with a huge screen. And I was worried about it, but we were just like, all right, let's go down the hill 2 minutes from after recording. And let's just see this now, so we don't have to try and double
up.
So
it's on the record now. Also, Mike thinks it's the greatest theater of all time.
I enjoyed that. That was a big screen. We were sitting, there was no bad seat in the house, and we enjoyed ourselves. But for most of our listeners here, if they're listening to this at this point, they like this series.
Yeah, if you stuck with the Conjuring reviews and the Annabelle and the lead up to the Warren's Universe retrospective stuff we did, there's no reason to not see this. If you need a horror movie, there's no reason to not see
this. If you do shop or have shopped at Hot Topic, then you'll enjoy this movie-going experience. It can be dumb fun for all of us, right? So this is a watch for you and I.
Yes.
But I don't think we're saying it's essential viewing.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not essential.
But it could be fun.
Yeah. Let's dance. Spoilers ahead!
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
Mike, and Oscar Sprint, spoilers!
This is the spoiler section for The Nun! If you have not seen The Nun yet, or if you are not caught up with the Warren Cinematic Universe, you want to hit pause here, stop the episode, go back, catch up, go see what you got to see, and then come back and hit play on us to hear our thoughts about the twists and turns of The Nun. Or if you just want to hear what we have to say about The Nun in general, and you don't care about seeing the movie first for yourself, this is where you want to be. But otherwise, go back and listen to the first 35 or so minutes of this podcast and get you all caught up. But from here on out, it's all spoilers all the time about The Nun. Let's start with some immediate carryovers, Michael.
Michael, there is a powerful evil presence here. Let's split up. I'll see you in a minute.
Yeah.
What the hell? Yeah. How many times can you split up? It's the dumbest decision I've
seen
in a while.
Well, that's what Frenchie does, too.
They all do.
Frenchie's got the torch at the very end when they go into this catacombs-like place with no lighting. He's the only one with a torch, and he, like, hears a noise. They're all three together, and he hears a noise, and he just immediately follows the noise while the father and Farmiga, I can never remember.
Taissa
Farmiga's character. Taissa Farmiga, good lord. Go in a separate direction. So, yes, that's Frenchie's bad.
Frenchie's actually probably the smartest of the three of these bimbos.
I agree with that as well.
But yeah, Demian Bashir, I can't get over the fact that after he's buried alive in the middle of the night, after he goes through
his most traumatic exorcism comes
back to life.
These are our worst scenes, because these are the biggest problems we had with the plot. So let's just get that out there. Because after he is buried alive, first of all, Taissa Farmiga recognizes that a bell ringing in the distance must be Father Burke buried alive, which makes no sense. She just hears a bell ring and she's like, Father?
And if the nun has the power to bury him alive, why doesn't she also bury her alive and Frenchie alive so that nobody can get out alive, so that she wins the movie, and so that she possesses one of them to then unbury them alive or whatever?
And if he's buried alive and she, the nun, has access to him while he's buried alive, as we see those hands come up over him and wrestle with him, why would she put books explaining what she is in the tomb with him? Maybe these books can tell us. Why would she do
that? Where the relic will exist,
right,
to
kill her, basically. Yes. Keep her contained or under. Why would she do that?
The nun is an idiot.
Thank you for saving me, but maybe these books that magically appeared will have something to say about
the
it.
The nun is the dumbest opposite the of nun, a bimbo of all.
The nun made some bad decisions. The nun made some poor decisions.
And it's minor spoiler for Conjuring 2 here. The nun kind of antagonizes Lorraine Warren to come defeat her in that movie.
Yeah. The nun, Valak, not the smartest demon.
All right. So I did love getting to some best scenes. We're going to kind of go back and forth because I got more worse scenes to come. But I did love the connection and where it fits in the Conjuring universe.
Thought that was the best part of the movie for me.
Frenchie is the first projected in their Warren kind of
So in the Conjuring 1, when the mother, whose family is being held captive by this demon, goes to seek out the Warrens, we see her meet them while they're giving a presentation, and the presentation they're giving in the Conjuring 1 has to do with an exorcism with a guy named Frenchie.
Yes.
His friends called him Frenchie, and that Frenchie character is this guy from this movie, who we find out at the end of the movie actually got possessed by Valak.
It ties in beautifully.
Yeah, I thought that was so well done. And that's something this series has done really well. It's like, you see these movies and they're fine, but they always make sure to make a concentrated effort to make sure everything flows beautifully at the end. We saw it in the Annabelle movies as well, and I think that's very important because this Conjuring universe is such a special, unique property. I think it's important that all these movies kind of remember that they're part of it and have immediate carryovers.
Yes, I'm kind of shocked that the Farmiga girl and the priest survived Demian Bashir, but I like that fact, Mike. I like it a lot. So I guess in terms of where it fits in the universe, you could have a whole series of prequels now with this old school
investigating
throwback prequel paranormal investigating unit where he can team up with her again.
Yeah.
The Vatican could send them on another fact-finding mission in another spooky abbey.
How did you feel about... I agree with everything you're saying, but how did you feel about the shots that were kind of taken at the church? Kind of unprovoked. And like, when Bashir is getting his orders to go seek out Taissa Farmiga's character, right? One of the priests says, shockingly, for once, we're not the ones keeping something secret. Like, something so blatant like that, like, yeah, we're the Christian church. We cover things up. It's like, a little unprovoked.
Well, if you've seen Spotlight, I mean...
obviously, there's a reason for that.
Movie going.
But I just thought, for just having kind of a throwaway line of dialogue for a series that's been so incredibly based in religion, to say, like, hey, all these beliefs that have killed all these demons, we're not good guys.
I worship Valak and Payman myself. So yeah, I'm not so against you're fine.
Yeah,
of that.
All right.
But, no. So,
I was wondering what that tail was.
666 burning on my forehead. No. I think it's a... Yeah, you might be right. It's a cheap shot.
It was your throwaway line. I just noticed I'd laughed at it myself.
But in a movie where the protagonist bites into a crystal relic, right? She bit into it. You don't get the blood if you don't bite into it.
Right.
She bites into the crystal relic, taking out Christ's blood, and then spits it on Valak's face, who just so happens to rip her out of the water before she drowns
her. Now, see, that's another mistake by Valak. She has Thaisa Farmiga drowning underwater. She sees that the oracle, the item...
Okay, you know what? It just dawned on me what she was doing, but she was going to puke in her mouth and possess her, right? So that's what she was
Why?
Doing. Well, because she needs a vessel. She does need
a vessel. You got Father What's-His-Name over there. You got Frenchie over here.
She already had Frenchie, but she was going to finally puke in her mouth. As they do in all these movies.
Oh, I think that's so stupid.
It's dumb. Valak needs to get you at point blank range for puking.
Also, why is she so bad at that? Like, she tries to do it to Father Bashir like 3 separate times, and he's able to fight her off easily.
Right. Didn't we talk about puking earlier in the episode?
Yes, with Audition, yeah.
Audition. Yeah. It's just full circle. Yeah. This movie is all about puking
in
your mouth.
It's all vomit all the time. Yeah. Is what Mike, and Oscar gives to you.
Conjuring universe is all about vomit. And that's what has to happen at the end of this movie. And I don't know if it's fun, but it's the reverse of that when she spits Christ's blood back onto her Valak's face.
I thought that was cool. I thought that was a cool twist, a cool ending, even though bringing Thaisa Farmiga out of the water I thought was really stupid. I thought you can't just puke in her mouth after she's dead. You're a demon. You can't bring the undead back to life. You are undead.
Yeah, I don't get it. But I don't get the nun's motivations at all. All right, are we going to get into some best scenes? Because I got a lot of things that I really, really liked in this.
Yeah, part. Well, I have two best scenes. My one we already covered was the tie-in at the end. I really like how this tied in together. I thought that was a deliberate choice. I thought it flowed really well. Good job by the screenwriters. Good job by the director to make that happen. I also really appreciated, so the scare in the hallway, right? It's the one that we saw in the preview, in the commercials that ran.
The body block.
Yeah.
The faceless
man. Yeah, exactly.
I wish I didn't see that in a trailer, honestly.
Now,
that
would
have scared the living poop out of me.
But it was different in the movie. This is the spoiler section. So it wasn't the exact same. In the preview, she turns around and says hello, and then we wait a couple beats, and then the thing comes out.
Okay.
In the movie, it was different. They just she turned around, doesn't even get hello out, and the thing comes out.
Again, I appreciated, I wonder if the silence would have been more effective.
Maybe, but I appreciated that it was different than something we had seen. I don't understand why horror movies don't do this in general. Take a take that doesn't make the final cut, that has a scare in it, show that scare in the preview, and then change that scene. Put a different cut in during the actual
movie. I had
seen
it in the preview, so the second that scene started, I focused my eyes on the side catacomb in the hallway, and I stared at it.
I just wish that horror movies would show, like, have a little misdirection. Show something that doesn't make the final cut,
John
and then
Carpenter
put your audience
on
unease. Yeah. I wish that would happen more. But that was my other best scene. I thought that was well done. They did try to do that in my eyes.
Okay. I wish this movie didn't show me so many of the scares in the previews.
It was
a big problem
with the marketing.
Yeah.
A lot of the 30-second spots or 10-second spots leading up to, it showed all the major scares.
I just wonder if you added 5 minutes of, like, silent and moving around without scaring you in this movie, if it would have been
a lesson from Conjuring 2, yeah.
Better film. The nun on the throne there, the shrouded, scary, you know, supposed Mother Superior or whatever you name the mm-hmm. the head of the Abbey there. The voice on that thing, I was scared. I also love the visual of it. That
can't
was
even see that's an actual person.
Terrifying.
There.
It made sense to kind of get the father speaking and following all of his rubrics of, you know, etiquette in terms of heading into an abbey. So that gave me some hope for in terms of what they were trying to do and splitting up. So that gave me it's a little bit of an explanation on that. But that was a great couple of scenes.
Agree. I totally agree.
It sets up that, dude, if you woke up and you saw a shadow praying. Prostrate, praying, and then you heard that,
and then you see the cross on the wall as it turns upside
down. Go to
down.
The mirror.
How
are they not in? You know, on a plane to New York. How are they not sailing
the
Titanic?
They were sealed in.
The Titanic was years earlier. Yeah. How are they not leaving immediately?
They
after
were
that?
Sealed in. She couldn't go anywhere.
If this ghost cannot physically just grab you and bring you into its lair, like, how are you not just leaving on your own volition, which you still have, apparently, because she's not powerful enough to do otherwise.
Yeah, except that she can put her hands on you, because she does it multiple times to both people.
But she's not powerful enough to just totally get... She needs to lure you, the nun, that is, lure you into her horror of of horrors.
Right, into the whatever room, yeah.
Right, and puke in your mouth.
But she still, there's other scenes where she does touch, I mean, in the grave. She's all over Father Burke there. When Thaisa Farmiga is walking down the hallway, she gets tapped on the back.
That's like why I don't get touch. Her. I don't get her powers. Yeah, like, I don't it's either. Just they inconsistent. Well it doesn't
and
work.
These characters don't have a ton of depth
the
to them.
The rules don't work. Now, that being said, the results of the nonsense is fun because I loved... I love the formation of the nuns when they're praying.
Oh, that was around that camera her. Angle. That shot was so cool.
Get the ceiling
oh,
view.
Oh, that was so cool.
And then boom, and it makes so much sense actually after the fact when you realize all those nuns are basically lingering positive spirits, right? For God or for the force of good in this movie, trying to help her. They're not the nun spirits, but there's some of those too. Like there's an evil nuns with no faces. And then there's the positive spirits of the good nuns. And I like that. That was really cool.
And they were casted really well too.
Yeah. And it makes sense. And it makes sense in terms of in terms of the theology. I thought that was a great sequence. Here's the thing. If you saw that shadow go from one end of the abbey to the other.
That was so cool. That was such a cool shot.
It's a great scene.
Yeah.
But if you saw that happen, wouldn't you just get... Why would you continue to hang out with these nuns?
I guess they're...
Well, here's the problem.
Compelled to do it because they're supposed to be there to investigate.
But building upon... I guess I'm going to answer my own question because you have the good influence of the lingering spirit of the good nuns, right?
Yeah.
They are praying in that scene, and you have the evil nun shadow on the wall going into the mirror, scaring you. So you have those two forces. So the good nuns know they have to keep her there, Thaisa, in order to close this ever-expanding evil force.
Right.
So they have to close this opening or whatever. So that's why.
But there's no good nun compelling her to stay.
But it made no sense. Like, why wouldn't they just leave after that? But that's why. And that's why nuns continue to
their whole investigation was centered around the idea of, is this land still holy? So I think they were looking for signs of good and evil. And as long as the good was still there,
good nuns have to haunt her as well because they have to get her to close the portal.
And I thought the visual effects were really well done too, because there are some times where you see some straight up kooky VFX. And
Frenchie getting haunted by the nun and Bashir getting haunted by the exorcism kid that he had, that was, you know, in his past. That was crazy.
But they didn't do enough too, right? So they didn't explain, they just said, oh yeah, I did this exorcism once and the kid kind of died. Like, they didn't explain anything about that scenario. They didn't explain, apparently Thaisa Farmiga's character has powers that we just never fully flesh out. Like, she's able to concentrate in the graveyard.
She looks exactly like Lorraine Warren.
she's able to, like, look and see what grave the father was actually in when Valak's trying to ring all the bells around her. And then she has the vision of the blood and is able to tell, oh yeah, that nun hung herself as a distract. Like, what are her powers? Why isn't anyone telling us this?
She needs to be Lorraine Warren's ancestor at the end of this.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's played by the younger sister, but if you have... they have to be setting this franchise up for multiple prequels with Demian Bashir and Thaisa Farmiga so that they can do the Scooby-Doo investigating more haunted abbeys. Otherwise,
I don't even think the timeline matches up, though, to have her be Lorraine Warren's mother.
In 52? No, you're right. Older... That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
No, you're right. So... Fuck, I'm an idiot. But I guess, why wouldn't you? I mean, it makes no sense why they wouldn't set that up.
Well, that's what I mean. Just
it's their playground.
At least give me an explanation. Why is she able to do these things?
They could have set it up in the 30s. Like, what's the difference?
Right. Well, I guess because World War II was the reason that Valak was able to
make it
escape.
World War I.
Yeah, right.
Shelling.
Yeah.
And bombs. I don't know. Look, the end scares Mike in terms of finishing up some of our best scenes here. That was pretty good. I mean, the spinning nightmare sequence we talked about, the crazy waking nightmare spectacle of that, you know, spinning hallway.
Yeah, that was
hallway.
Really, really cool. Really well done, really well shot. A lot of the shots in this are, like you said, the camera angles are just crazy.
I was looking on my cell phone. I pulled it up really quick, and it was exactly an hour into the movie, just about. So that Spielbergian premise not showing
finally
the monster
don't have the reveal,
in full reveal until that point. That was really
There's
smart.
Certainly enough goods here to salivate over. Dauberman and Hardy, and obviously James Wan playing a role too. I thought the collaboration between those three guys, really, really, they understand horror. I mean, there's some stuff that's not going to, like, why would you stop in the middle of exploring this demon to take your final vows and enter nunhood? I thought that was so egregious. Like, you're in the middle of hunting down this demon.
I think the logic of the story would have said that it takes a nun to hold the relic.
Hey,
so that's why.
Why didn't Valak just come out right and never let her finish her vows?
True.
Like, I thought that was so, that was little.
It was too sacred to interrupt. I don't know. I don't understand.
Okay, then tell me that. You
I
know?
Don't understand, like, the evil power
right,
rules.
Exactly.
The power rules don't
I
make sense.
I needed more backstory for Valak. I needed more backstory for Father Burke.
For critics to really take this movie seriously, you would have to establish the rules.
Gotta play by the rules. Unless you don't.
Of the supernatural.
Yeah, every horror movie has the rules powers. They play by, unless you make it supremely obvious that you're not playing by the rules in this one, which even then you have to explain that,
right?
As some horror movies do, like Cabin in the Woods, they explain they're not playing by the rules, or the rules are kind of a meta joke in and of themselves.
Yes, I agree. So I guess you have any final thoughts on this baby?
I think it's worth seeing. I really do. I you know, it's not going to be a highly graded movie. It's not an Oscar movie by any means, but it's a fun horror movie. We're in the horror season. People want to get their scares in. This is a perfectly acceptable movie, and it's part of a great universe. And the tie-ins and the payoffs are pretty well done. Mm-hmm. You're going to get a more cinematic experience with this than you will with many other horror movies. So why not spend your money on this and go see it and have a good time for 90 minutes?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think this is a B84 for me in terms of a final grade. I enjoyed this movie going experience. I think I forgive it more sins than other critics do. I don't think that's just me being biased because we reviewed the whole series. I genuinely enjoyed myself last night and
yeah,
the movie going.
Same
I was
here.
I had low expectations, so I guess it's always about expectations. That's why we do what we do as movie critics.
I'm like a C plus B minus on that line. So yeah, I mean, the you know, there's
that's
some
the MMO curve as usual.
Yeah, there's some unforgivable things that the characters choose to do.
I was on a fence of 83, 84.
Yeah, so I mean, it's right there. It's. You're not going to regret having spent your money on this movie.
This movie scared me.
Yeah.
This movie made me just drop my jaw at the visuals of it. This movie made me laugh multiple times at the awesomely
badness. Whether intentional
of it.
Or not. Yeah, exactly. I agree.
So it worked. So I guess to get out of here, Mike, you want to re-rank these five movies real quick?
Yeah, all right, let's do that. We've done all five of the Warren Cinematic Universes. Crooked Man's
yeah,
probably
not
going to
do an extra re-rank episode.
So, let's see. I wasn't just off the top of my head. I think Annabelle Creation is still my number five.
Oh, in terms of rewatch enjoyment, yeah, I didn't love the enjoyment of that, but I love that scene so much that it's going to be higher on my list. My number five is Annabelle 1, even though there's some saving graces to it.
Okay, I could see that. Annabelle 1's probably my number four. Those two Annabelle movies, and still they're good. They're fun watches, but I just couldn't get into the gist of them for me. So I'm 5-4 with my Annabelle Creation, Annabelle 1.
I didn't love The Conjuring 1 rewatch. That's probably my number
really?
Three.
Wow.
Annabelle
All
Creation's
right.
probably my number four. You're probably right. In terms of a movie, though, if I had to rank, like, good movies, I would probably say Annabelle 1, The Nun is next. And it makes sense in terms of Rotten Tomatoes scores and all that.
Oh, so, working five to one.
5-4. Okay. But enjoyment factor, I liked The Nun more than Annabelle Creation.
Okay.
I'm a little... Yeah,
I did
and then
too.
I had
I mean,
the
Nun would probably be my... So I probably structure them, the Annabelle movies, The Nun, and then the two Conjuring movies. But I think Conjuring 2 was better than Conjuring 1.
But like scare factor, I would say 1, 2. Conjuring 2 is the scariest movie of the franchise.
By far.
And it was... the most fun I had in terms of a rewatch, in terms of building up to this. The Nun was a fun watch.
Yes.
And it scared me.
Yeah, this might be the second scariest of them all. I mean, if it's not this one, it's probably Conjuring 1 for me.
Right. Conjuring 1 scared me a couple times, you know, moving the girl on the bed, or maybe that was Conjuring 2. I'm getting my wires crossed. The bed sheet scene in Conjuring 1 was just like insane.
Yeah.
And that freaked me. I remember just like swallowing, and you get that after effect of like just totally freaking. You know that feeling? Did I put it in audible form?
I think you
form
did a great job.
You?
Yeah. People can relate immediately to what you just
like
said.
Like suds in the back of your throat. You're so scared when I saw that in the middle of the night.
I think you might need to see a doctor.
I have issues. Physical issues.
Yeah, anyway. In terms of enjoyment and scares, I would go the two Annabelles are at the bottom for me. This is right in the middle, and then the two Conjuring movies.
And yes, sort of. Okay, so if I'm ranking movies in terms of their quality, I am saying Conjuring 2 my number one, Conjuring 1 my number two, Annabelle Creation, my number 3. 4 is The Nun, and 5 is
Annabelle 1.
So
we're right. We're pretty much saying the same thing, except for the 3-4.
But scare factor, I like The Nun up there at number 2, maybe, or number 3, somewhere in there.
Totally agree. But what do you guys think? We want to hear from you. Did you enjoy The Nun? Was it disappointing to you? Was it everything you thought it would be and more? Are we missing out on some things? Let us know. And also get to us. Don't forget that 6 Degrees of MMO. We want to hear your connections and your links going from Deborah Messing to Sir Anthony Hopkins. Get those to us. You can leave them at hashtag 6 Degrees of MMO with those.
I don't think I said it at the top of the show, but Deborah Messing was in The Wedding Date with Dermot Mulroney.
So you're giving him a hint.
I'm giving you a hint. You could, I mean, every one of these should be Dermot Mulroney based, right? Or Dylan McDermott. I mean, that's a meta
Dylan,
joke.
Dylan, 6 degrees of Dylan McDermott.
That's
Mulroney.
A meta joke we stole from Family Guy that we used on this pod in previous episodes that we can give to you now in this little amalgam of a popular movie game that we're also playing with you in 6 degrees of MMO.
And hopefully next episode we'll be able to reveal the winner for that. Hashtag 6 degrees of MMO. You can leave those responses and answers to us at Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on Twitter, MikeMikeAndOscar@gmail.com on Reddit, and just get to us. Leave us those hashtags and let us know what you thought about this episode and others and the Conjuring movie cinematic universe in general.
Yeah, we had fun with this rewatch.
Yeah, Mike, any final words of wisdom here?
Again, this movie's going to make a bajillion dollars, so James Wan is a guy to, you know, work with. I think this sounds like a good receptionist at Atomic Monsters. Hi, this is also Mike, Atomic Monster. I mean,
He could use a movie review podcast under his umbrella.
Yeah.
It's not a bad idea.
You need, like, you know, your Flavor Flav of the... well, where's Hype Man? I'm trying to say, where's Hype Man?
Yeah.
Doesn't that reference still make sense? I'm 10 years too
late. We are reality stars looking for love. guys, reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us, and we will check you out next time.
See ya.